The Volume.
Soup with Coop is brought to you by FanDuel. It's never been easier to play fantasy on FanDuel. Whether you love basketball, golf, soccer, or any other fantasy sport, there is a contest for every fan. FanDuel, more ways to win.
It is my great honor to welcome my next guest on Soup with Coop, a man who needs no introduction, but head ball coach might do, Coach Steve Spurrier. Coach, welcome to Soup with Coop.
Well, thank you, Coop. Good to be on with you.
You are a real gentleman for agreeing to do this. We've known each other probably I think the first time we met was in New Orleans. You were in town for the Sugar Bowl, and I was home for Christmas holiday, and you were recruiting Peyton and came over to the house. And I remember being pretty quiet and letting you do your work. And you were
the talking. Yeah, that was an interesting recruiting deal with Peyton. Of course, we wanted him, but we had Danny Werfel here as a redshirt freshman who eventually would win the Heisman and win national championships. So I still remember our recruiting coach, Bob Sanders, came in about a week before signing day, or three or four days. And he said, Coach Peyton's going to Tennessee. And I said, you know what? For him, that's the best place. It really is. And it might be best for all of us. And it worked out. He had a fabulous career. Should have won the Heisman. I still don't know how that vote went that way, but it did. And Danny Werfel had a fantastic career, and, everybody was happy.
Speaking of soup, what kind of soup are you having today, Coach?
Coop, I've got some chicken noodle with a few carrots in it. My wife said this is the kind that she prepares mostly. Sometimes she'll put some more vegetables in it. But it's a chicken noodle with, you can see those carrots in there.
Mm. It's impossible to talk to you, Coach, and not talk about Jerry, your wife, who I've met several times. We were in New York, and she was talking about how she always, bakes cookies for your players during their birthday, and just a huge part of the coaching process and getting to know players and making them feel warm and welcome in your program. I'm glad to know she's still preparing soup for you today.
Yeah, she can do just about everything. In fact, Bobby Stoops one time said, my wife learned how to be a head coach's wife from Jerry Spurrier. So she, the birthdays for all the players on the team, she'd make those Toll House cookies all the time, and they were really good. In fact, we had to tell our players, don't leave them out in your locker now, because people were coming by and taking one or two all the time. So they had to lock them up and try to take them with them. But she loved being the head coach's wife, and a big reason for the success we had, of course, is your spouse, and she was the best.
Now, your high school coach, one of the great names of all times, Kermit Tipton. People aren't named Kermit Tipton anymore. It's sad that that's the case. But the fact that he let you call your own plays and you came back and lit him up, did he hold true and say, Coach, Steve, you can let it rip for now, or did he take control of the reins again?
Well, we didn't come out throwing right away, which we probably should have. And I even look back on my college career here at Florida. And Coach Gray, the quarterbacks called the plays back in those days. That's just the way we did it. And I always wondered if we'd come out firing the way we just did now, we could have scored a lot more points. But we came out, first down was either a run of some kind, second down was a draw or a screen. And then if you got third and eight, then you throw the ball. But, 20 to 25, 30 passes, if you threw 30 passes, that was a bunch back in the 60s. So, in fact, when your dad what did he make, like 540 yards in that classic game against against Alabama?
Alabama. One of the first games on national television, so everybody kind of saw it.
That was one of the first national TV games. And the amount of yards that he was ran and threw for, is that what it was, a combination? 540. Yeah, that was unheard of. And maybe why don't teams do that all the time? And, of course, that's what Kyle Trask is doing here now at Florida. Coach Mullen's letting him open up from the beginning. And that's how you throw 4, 5, 6 touchdown passes every game. And, by the way, I learned that Kyle Trask went to the Manning football camp.
So he sure did.
Throw the ball, he tells people.
we're taking credit for all of his success. So I hope that's okay.
Man, y'all got a lot of guys out there. I was talking to my son, Steve Jr., about that. And he said, gosh, all those high school kids go through there. It seems like.
I know. We were sad not to have it this year. It's our 25th year. So we're going to have our 25th year on our 26th year and hopefully get back to home. But I'm proud of Kyle. He's, you know, it's kind of fun to watch him persevere when everyone else seems in this era, you know, they want to transfer, they want to opt out, they want to jump in the portal, things aren't right, and he just has grinded, and now it's working out for him. I'm thrilled about that.
Oh, I agree. He's one of those young men that everybody on the team loves him. He doesn't want any recognition, passes it off to his receivers, his offensive line, his defense, his teammates.
Coach, at Florida, you had great, you know, your great junior and senior season. There's a story about y'all being behind and driving down to try to beat Auburn and get down there to about the 40-yard kick, and the kicker is going to jog out, and you wave him off and want to kick it yourself. How does that happen?
Well, Coop, that didn't happen like that. actually, the first game of the season, we played Northwestern, and I kicked two field goals that game. I thought I'd only kicked one until I read the write-up the other day. I was looking at a little brochure. It had every game in the write-up of the 66 season. But we beat them 43-7, so it wasn't any big deal. And then I really did not attempt one. I attempted one on the road somewhere and missed. So I hadn't attempted one at home since then, and this was sometime in October. But we were down there, and I was the long-distance guy. In practice, I kicked around the 40-yarders. And actually, first game of the season, I kicked a 41-yarder. So this was a 40, so it was sort of within my reach. And it was fourth down. It was still 2 minutes left in the game. But I said, Coach, let me take a shot at it. He said, okay. And so I put my little square toe on. We had that square toe. Of course, we were straight-on kickers back in those days. And I was able to punch it or squeeze it through the middle there. It didn't clear by a lot, but that's all it counts is, you know, go over the bar. So long story short, we're playing Tennessee in 05, and we're down 15-13, and we got like a 49-yard field goal, and I don't know what to do. Let's throw for it or run or – and our field goal kicker, Josh Brown, kid comes by, he says, field goal, right, Coach? And he wanted it. I said, yeah, field goal, let's go. And the kid made the kick of his life. He made the kick of his life. And it was the first time South Carolina had ever beaten Tennessee in Knoxville. And when a player, coach, give me a shot at it, I always, you got it, pal. Go get it. And so that was, coach let me have the shot. And certainly as a coach, I tried to let our players, when they wanted to go at it, let them have it.
And coach, you finished the 66 season, have a great year, wind up winning the Heisman Trophy. And now, you know, the Heisman Trophy watch starts, you know, before the season even starts, and it's every week. They're monitoring it, and this one's going ahead. How did you find out about the Heisman Trophy when you won it? I know it was a lot more informal back then.
Back in the 60s, they actually gave the trophy out, and you had one more game left, one or two left in the season. I know we had one more left. That's what it was. We had University of Miami coming in here. But according to the papers, I was sort of leading the field goal against Auburn, obviously, put me in position. And to tell you the truth, the sports writers in the South, Tom McEwen in Tampa, our sports information guy here at Florida, Norm Carlson, the SEC hadn't had a winner, I think, since Billy Cannon back in about 59 or 60, something like that. So anyway, they sort of did a little spread, and the newspaper said I was favored to win it. So when they called, I got a call to go to the president's office over in the president's building. And I got on the phone, and they told me I'd won the Heisman. So that's how we did it back then. And then you fly to New York and do the banquet and all that. 2 or 3 weeks later.
Now, you get drafted very early, third pick in the draft. How would you describe your NFL experience out in San Francisco, backing up John Brody, kind of being groomed, but kind of a long-term grooming as opposed to the world we live in, but throw him in. Did you enjoy that experience? And what was that like compared to college?
Well, it was unusual. Somebody said, how'd that day go? And I said, well, I was sitting down in my, I got a local lawyer here in Gainesville. We call him Uncle Willie. He was our agent and didn't charge anything. So we all the Gators, we used him. And it wasn't on TV or anything. I'm sitting down there and he looked at me and he said, Steve, the 49ers just drafted you. I had not talked to anybody with the 49ers. I talked a little bit with the New Orleans Saints. They were the new team in the league then. And Atlanta, they'd been in a year. And even the New York Giants, they had some kind of a first round pick or something. But anyway, San Francisco traded three players to Atlanta, and Atlanta gave them the pick, and they picked me. So they had Brody. Brody'd been there like 9 years, going into his 10th, I think. And so I went out there and they said, well, we want you to sit behind Brody for 4 or 5 years. I said, 4 or 5? Well, okay, whatever you say. So I didn't really, you know, I don't guess I had a lot of fire to go out there and try to beat him out or this, that, and the other. And then eventually I got to play a little bit. But I don't know. Sometimes I don't know if my give a damn was as good as it should have been. I got a chance to play when he sprained an ankle a lot. 1 year, 1972 was the year I got to play a whole lot. But other than that, because I was a backup quarterback, I got 10 years in somehow. And the NFL pension checks, I have made more in pension money than I ever made as a player already. So that was a good thing about being a backup for a lot of years.
So you wind up going back to Florida. You pop over with Pepper Rodgers for a year at Georgia Tech. You come to Duke, and then you get kind of your big break. The USFL starts, and you get the head job at Tampa. What was the US? I remember the USFL. We had the Breakers down in New Orleans. When did the USFL season start, and then what was that like in the world of competitive landscape with the NFL?
I think first game was in March. We'd practice pretty much the whole month of February, and March, April, May, I think the championship games were in June. But it was we played 18 games, and this year at Tampa we were 14-4, and everybody stayed healthy. Amazingly, for 18 games, the first and third year we had a few guys get hurt here and the other. But yeah, it was you know, it's just football. We had crowds of about 42,000 down there, a lot. So Tampa Bay, we were competing against the Buccaneers, and they were not very exciting back in the. See, that would be in the 83-4-5 was those 3 years. So we had good crowds, had good teams. We did not win the championship, but we had some good teams, and I think we were 35-19 through those 3 seasons.
And then the USFL folds, and you go to Duke, and then you just start absolutely, I mean, just tearing up the ACC. I mean, out of the blue. Duke had not been to a bowl game since 1960. And you go to bowl games, win ACC Coach of the Year in 88, 89. And it's the reason I know the names Anthony Dillwag and Clarkston Hines. And one question, it was funny, I texted Peyton. I said, I'm interviewing Steve Spurrier tomorrow. Coach, you got any questions for him? He said, ask him who gave him the idea after y'all beat UNC to take a big team picture in front of the scoreboard after y'all beat him. I was curious whose idea that was.
That let's see. Same year, 1989, we opened the season with one win and three losses. And we lost at Virginia, at Tennessee, and at South Carolina. We beat Northwestern at home. And we had a come to Jesus meeting. All right, we found a running back. We changed our whole defense. We went to 8-9 man front. We had to try to stop somebody. So we played basically a goal line defense. If you throw an 80-yard touchdown, hey, good for you. At least we get the ball back. We had to get our offense on the field. We really had a big, strong offensive line. Had Clarkson Hines, who was the ACC Player of the Year. So anyway, we get on a hot streak. We upset Clemson. We go to Maryland. Now, we hadn't beat Maryland up there in something like close to 30 years. I don't know what it was. And So we're on the sideline. We're up 46-25, something like that. And one of our assistant coaches, Jim Collins, his wife, was always on the sideline with her camera taking pictures everywhere. And I said, Jerry, we hadn't beaten these guys at Maryland in almost 30 years. We're going to take a picture on the scoreboard. And so game was over and we're heading in. I said, fellas, come on up here. And they left the line and everything, the scoreboard. Their fans had already left. There's nobody on the field left. And our guys were giving it thumbs up. Yeah, and they loved it. We took a picture at Maryland. So I came in the locker room and I said, all right, if we win the rest of our games, we still had to go four more ACC teams and win the conference that year. I said, if we win the next four, we'll take a picture at Keenan Stadium at Chapel Hill. Now we got to run all four to do it. And then we forgot about it. Now, I mean, we didn't talk about it after that. So I just planted, you know, you plant a little seed. So after we beat them up there, 40, we're in the locker room and I'd forgotten about it. And one of the guys said, Coach, you said we're going to take a picture in front of the scoreboard. I said, dang, let's go. So we went running out and, you know, there's still a bunch of photographers and some people out there, but we'd actually gone in and I'd forgotten about it, but it was not to rub it in. North Carolina was 1-10 that year, Coop. You don't rub it in a team that's that bad.
Soup with Coop is proud to be presented by FanDuel. Never played FanDuel Fantasy before? Great! FanDuel is offering users the chance to play free, no deposit required, with a free entry to an NBA contest. Plus, for those who want to deposit, FanDuel is offering up to a $500 bonus instantly when you make your first deposit with our 20% deposit match. Why do you play on FanDuel? FanDuel Fantasy is an easy-to-use app. Pick a new team every game, different and unique contests across sports in relation to your skill level, compete against your friends in head-to-head matchups. FanDuel is offering users the chance to play free, no deposit required, with a free entry to an NBA contest. And FanDuel is offering up to a $500 bonus instantly when you make your first deposit with our 20% deposit match. Go to FanDuel.com/Cowherd to sign up today. That is FanDuel.com/Cowherd so they know we sent you. FanDuel, more ways to win.
And Coach, on to Florida. Your signature look at Florida was certainly the visor. Were you wearing the visor at Duke and in the USFL before that?
You know, I wore a visor just occasionally, but that last year at Duke, we had it was a rainy day when we upset Clemson. I mean, it was raining a little bit here and there, off and on, and I wore a hat. And I'm not real superstitious, but I said, I'm going to wear this dang hat until we lose a game. And well, we didn't lose another game the rest of the season. So I actually wore a white hat, sort of like a golf hat, I guess, with Duke on it, that I wore there. But I came back down to Florida, sunshine, it's hot all the time, you know, preseason practice and so forth. I wore visors on the golf course. I said, heck, I'm going to start wearing a visor everywhere, practice, games, and so forth. And I wasn't the first ever to wear a visor. I remember there was a picture of Vince Lombardi when they played the L.A. Rams out there. He had a little old white visor on. He didn't wear one in Green Bay, but on the road, on hot days, he actually wore one out there. He might have been the first to ever do it.
So you get the job at Florida, kind of the probably, you know, great coming back home. Everybody's excited to see you. And you got a team on probation, but y'all start making noise early, and dear goodness, I mean, you win six SEC championships, you win a national championship. But during that time, Coach, you've always been known to, you know, win and stir the pot. Have you always enjoyed kind of giving people a little grief from time to time after a win? You know, you gave Tennessee and then Florida State with free shoes, University. I always enjoyed the banter there. How did that go over with the other coaches?
Oh, our coaches, we didn't worry about that. You know, the Art of War, Sun Tzu's book, Art of War, somebody gave me one of those way back early. And one of them says, if your enemies have nothing bad to say about you, then you have done nothing to disrupt their way of life. So if they're beating us, they don't say anything bad about us. But when we're beating them, yeah, they the Bulldogs, after I think we were about 3-4-0 against them, after they had won, 15 of the last 20 years before 90, they'd won 15 of the 20. And all of a sudden we're, you know, we went 7 in a row, but and won 11 of 12. But after about 3 or 4 in a row, they were really talking nasty about us, about being arrogant, no respect. We show no respect for the opponents or something like that. And we run up the score. I had a comment. Somebody said, what do you think about that? And I said, well, you know what? They're calling us cocky. They're calling us arrogant. They're calling it a bunch of run up the score thugs and no respect. I said, but you know one thing? They're not calling us anymore. They're not calling us losers anymore. And our fans, I think, got a kick out of that because we were losers when it came to playing Georgia until 1990. Overall, they beat us a lot more than we beat them.
Well, you had an unbelievable career at Florida and decided that maybe it was time to, you know, 10, 11 years is a long enough to be in one spot. What was there a kind of a curiosity about the NFL? I know your next move was the Redskins. What did you anticipate, and was it harder or easier or different than you thought it would be?
You know, back in those days, college coaches and they used to say, if you've been somewhere 10, 11, 12 years or something, it's time to move on. Fans are tired of you. They this, that, and the other. And really, when I left, a whole bunch of Gators said he's only won one SEC in the last 5 years. Now, 3 of those other years, we were top 5 in the nation, but we didn't win the SEC that year. But anyway, in the back of my mind, NFL, you almost can triple whatever you make in college back then. Now it's about the same money now, or even more in college, it seems like. So I just thought, you know, your plans change as you go through life, as we all know. So my plan was, maybe coach 5 or 6 years in the NFL, and then hang it up and go play golf and go to the beach and do what retired people do. You know, when you're coaching, you think someday you want to retire. And then when you do, you say, why did I retire? And so forth, which a lot of coaches do. But anyway, yeah, I went to the wrong team. I took the team that offered the most money instead of the best situation. But anyway, after a couple of years up there, certainly wasn't working out. It gave me a chance to go to South Carolina by leaving up there and so forth.
Right now, what do you miss most about coaching?
The part probably I miss most is the game planning, the game itself. The game itself, I always said, was the most fun part for me. I've heard some coaches, I won't mention their name, that said, if it wasn't for the game itself, man, this coaching would be great. You know, go to booster meetings and this, that, and the other, and talk to the media. But no, the actual game itself, the actual competing, you know, it's us against them. When it's over, somebody's going to be a winner, somebody's going to be a loser, and we're going to shake hands with them. And I always felt like when you're on the losing end, that other coach looks at you and he says, I'm smarter than you. My guys are tougher than your guys. And we kicked your butt, something like that. And so you don't want to shake hands with the other guy thinking that's what he's thinking.
Coach, I can't thank you enough for joining me today. It's been an absolute treat. One thing we do at the very end of the show, we take a little bite of the soup and you rate it on 1 to 1,000, how it grades out. So give me a little.
Is one the best? If one's the best, I'll say this.
No, one is the worst.
Okay. This is the best soup I've had in a long time. And it's just a chicken noodle with some carrots in it.
Thank you, Coach.
All right, good to be with you.
You too.
All right, see y'all.
Bye-bye.